Okay, we're starting here about six lines up from the bottom on Pei Dalet Amud Bet. We're just going to quickly chazer over the machloket Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan that we discussed yesterday, which is Itmar. Eiver she'en alav kezayit basar b'makom zeh. Ve'esh alav kezayit basar b'makom acher. You have an eiver, you have some sort of limb, bone, that has a kezayit basar on it, but in a location where you're going to break it, there is not a kezayit basar. Now, as Tosafot points out, that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish here, within this memra, are really arguing within the position of Rabbi. We just saw in the previous Braita that Rabbi has this position about Kezayit Basar. The question is, when he has that position about Kezayit Basar, does that mean it just needs a Shir Achila of Kezayit Basar? Or does it mean it needs a Shir Achila, the Makom, that you're going to do the Shever, the Makom that you break it? But they're not arguing in the similar Machloket to the Chachamim and Rabbi. Rather, within the position of Rabbi, they're having this Machloket. Rav Yochanan Amar, Yeshbo Meshuvah Shviyat Etzem, you're in violation of Etzem Lo Tishberu Bo for Korban HaPesach if you break such a bone. Shem Ben Lokish, Omer, Eimbo Meshuvah Shviyat Etzem, there is no problem. So now, Etevei Rav Yochanan the Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan asks Rav Shem Ben Lokish, Ve'etzem Lo Tishberu Bo, brings a brighter that says you may not break any of the bones of the Korban HaPesach. Echad Etzem Sheish Alav Gezayit Basar, that's whether it's a bone that has a Gezayit on it, or whether it's a bone that does not have a kezayit basar in it. My ain't a love kezayit basar. What does that mean that doesn't have a kezayit basar? Even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that the bone has to have a kezayit basar on it. Just doesn't have to be in the location where you break the bone. But he agrees, and that's the position of Rabbi, that you need at least a kezayit basar on a bone in order to be problematic. So what does that mean, ain't a love kezayit basar? Ilema deina love kezayit basar klau. He said there's no basar on it at all. Then there's no iser of shvirat etzem. You need shir achila before there is a violation of breaking the bone. Elala b'chikamar. Isn't this what it means? Rabbi Yochanan is trying to explain the bright. And of course, his explanation of the bright that will accord with his position, which is echad etzem sheish alav gzei basar b'makom zeh ve'echad shein alav gzei basar b'makom zeh ve'esh alav gzei basar b'makom acher. That's how I'll interpret the bright. One statement is that I have gezayit basar on the bone where I'm breaking it. And the next statement says I don't have a gezayit basar. That's a case where I don't have a gezayit basar in the place that I'm breaking it, but it is somewhere else. And both of those are problematic. And for me, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. But for you, Reish Lakish, how are you going to explain this braita? So I'm really low. Reish Lakish says, no, that's not the explanation of the braita, but rather, chachi kamar. This is the way to read it. Echad etzem sheyesh alav gezayit basar mi bachutz. So that's the yesh alav kezayit basar, is that you have a kezayit basar outside of the bone, meaning you have flesh on the bone, that's a kezayit. Ve'echad etzem she'ein alav kezayit basar mi bachutz, you don't have flesh on the outside, ve'yesh alav kezayit basar mi bifnim, b'makom shvira. On the location of where you're breaking it, there's enough marrow there that you have a kezayit, quote-unquote, a kezayit basar there, and that's why it's problematic. Ve'hatanya, hatanya here is b'nichuta, is in support of Reish Lakish's position that marrow is considered to be kezayit basar and is problematic in terms of shviyat etzem, which is etzem lo tish birubo. The pasuk says by the korban haPesach you may not break any bones in it. Echad etzem sheish bo moach ve'echad etzem sheim bo moach. It was just to read the pasuk in abstract. I would look at it and say, okay, that would include any bone. Doesn't matter whether the bone has marrow in it. Doesn't matter if the bone does not have marrow in it. Uma ani mekayim. But then I have another pasuk there, it says, v'achlu et basar b'layla zeh. There's a requirement to eat or consume all the flesh of the Korban HaPesach on that night. So how am I going to have that pasuk work out? But basar shagabi etzem, that have to do with the flesh that's outside of the bone. So easy, can't break the bones, that's any type of bone. Eat the basar, that's all the basar that's on top of the bones. Oh, alright, that's one interpretation, but let me give you an alternative. Einu elo b'basar b'shetoch etzem. That v'achlu et basar b'layla zeh is an obligation not only to eat the flesh on the bone, but the stuff inside the bone, the marrow as well. Umani mikayim v'etzem lo tish berubo. So then what am I going to do with etzem lo tish berubo in that case? That's v'etzem sheim bo moach. That's only on a bone that doesn't have marrow. Aval v'etzem sheish bo moach, a bone that does have marrow, shover v'ochel. You break it open and you eat it. V'alti tamah. We can say, what do you mean break it open and eat it? You just said etzem lo tish berubo. Shari, yavo asay, v'itcha lo tasay. That's not a problem. I have an obligation. V'achu et basar v'layla zeh mitzvah tasay. I have a mitzvah both to say etzem lo tish rubo. The mitzvah that I say will override, and I'll break the bone and eat it. And the pure etzem lo tish rubo will be in a case where I have a bone that doesn't have marrow in it. That bone I may not break at all. Shomer etzem lo tish rubo, the pasuk that's found by Pesach Sheni and Parshat Balotcha, It says there, you may not break any of the bones of the Pesach Sheni. Shein Talmud Omar. You didn't need that pasuk. It was extraneous because Sherei Kvar Ne'amar. The pasuk already says, Kechol Chukat HaPesach Yasu Oto. It says by the Pesach Sheni, you must do it with all of the laws, the principles of Pesach Rishon. And the Gemara is going to darshan later on in the ninth perek that refers to all things that are internal or integral to the Korban HaPesach. It has to do not with externalities, but all things that are internal. So it doesn't mean chametz, doesn't mean all the other items. It means things that are particular to the Korban HaPesach. Not breaking the bones is particular to the Korban HaPesach. So it should have been covered by this. So Avi Omer, so what's that extra what's coming to teach you? Echad etzem sheish bo mach, ve'echad etzem shein bo mach. That comes to be conclusive about the two options. I'm going to take the first of the two options, which is no bones can be broken. That means not a bone with marrow in it, not a bone without marrow in it. And that supports Rish Lakish's opinion, because a bone that has marrow in it, the only problem is that you have a kazayit basar inside the bone. And despite the fact that it's only inside the bone, still there's a restriction against etzem lo tishbru bo. You may not break any of the bones. So that's in support of Rish Lakish's understanding of the Braita. As yesterday we noted, the Tosafot introduces a problem, which is, Bidno demi akir lav lo mikayim asay. We have a general principle when it comes to asay dochalot asay that most of the time, or most of the shouldn't believe, that it has to be done simultaneously. Which is that we only allow you to violate the lot asay if you accomplish the asay at the time that you violate the lot asay. That's generally the principle that we have by asay dochalot asay. That's not the case here. Here you break the bone, and then only after that do you eat the marrow that's inside. So it's not happening simultaneous, which seems to be a prerequisite for asay doche lo tasay. Then he adds a side question, which is, why don't we just use a coal and get inside of the bone? Because if you use a coal to get inside of the bone, then you don't have to be violate the lo tasay, and you can still eat the marrow. So he says, if you hold like Rabbo from yesterday, who said that the problem was sreifat kodeshim, that you're going to burn away or ruin some of the kodeshim, that works well, because you can't do it, because otherwise you're going to ruin the kodeshim to get there, so it's not an option. He says, I'll leave it with that. But he still doesn't answer the question of asay doche lo tasay. So as I mentioned yesterday, the Sfat Emet notes that this might be an exception to that rule, because in this case, you see that the only way to access the marrow is by breaking the bone. So in an instance where there are different ways to do something, now it happens to be that the lo tasay is involved in going to the asay, then fine. Over here, where the only access to the marrow is through a lotasay of doish brubo, then it may not have to be simultaneous anymore. It might be because it's the prerequisite to getting to the bone that we allow you, therefore, to break the bone to get access to the marrow in this case. So that's why the Sfat Emet says it's not an issue. You should know that the Gemara in other places says from this principle over here that we learn out that asay is not doche lotasay in kodoshim. Because over here we say that it doesn't happen that way. We don't allow you to get to the marrow through breaking up the bone. And therefore they establish a paradigm here in Kodoshim, which is that Aseh is not Doche Lot Aseh within the world of Kodoshim. So now the Gemara continues with a subsequent question on that position of Reish Lakish, which is Meitevei, Eiver Sheyatza Mikzato. You have an Eiver which left, a portion of it left Yerushalayim. The portion that's outside of Yerushalayim is problematic. The portion that's inside of Yerushalayim is fine. Potech al makom shemagil etzim. So now, the problem with a Korban Pesach, which is different than many other Kodeshim, which we'll see in the upcoming Mishnah as well, is that by other Kodeshim, you just take a kupitz, take a hatchet, and you smash it, you cut it in half, right where you need to divide it. Not a problem. But the Korban Pesach doesn't work, because you can't break the etzim to divide it. So now, what do? You cut with a knife, until you reach down, from the flesh down to the bone level. Once you reach the bone level, kolef, you peel it away, which means that you move the knife along the bone, stripping the basar away from the bone, kolef et shemegila perek, until you reach the joint between the bones. And then v'chotech, and then you sever it. The only restriction is again breaking bones, not the cartilage in between or the attachments between the joints between the bones. So therefore you just cut when you hit the next joint between the bones. So you take off the basar that is kasher still, the basar that's inside or internal. You take that out. The remaining part has to be gotten rid of, which is the bone, the whole bone, even though only half the bone is problematic, but the whole bone plus the basar that went out. So that'll get burned. We'll get rid of that. Basar that's good, you'll take in and you'll eat it. Question now is, V'yamart, Eivir she'in alav kazay basar b'makom zeh. V'yesh alav basar b'makom acher. Doesn't have kazay basar here, but in another occasion it does. Ein bo mishum shvirat etzem, there's no problem breaking it. Lama li dekolef, ad shemegila perak v'chotech. Why do you have to slice away the basar until you reach the joint and then sever it over there? Niklof bei porta. Just clear away a space. Think about an incident where you need, the person needs stitches or needs something on their head, chas v'shalom. They shave away a little of the hair there where they need to do the work, and then they do the work there. So same thing over here. Clear away the basar where you need to do the work, and then you can cut right there because there's no kazayit basar there according to Reish Lakish. Oh, there's a kazayit basar on the other part of the etzim. That doesn't matter. So just clear away that part, v'nitvarei, and then break it right along that line. Why do you need all this complication of slicing away the basar, getting to the joint, cutting it off there? You can cut it right on the location as long as you clear away the basar from that area. So, bayamar mishum poko. We don't let you do that because of the risk that if you break the bone here, you're going to need a lot of force. Bones don't break easily. And if you're going to do this with a hatchet, it takes a lot of strength to do that. When you come down with that type of strength on the bone, it's a highly likelihood that, right, that it'll crack along or break in other places. And there's basar on the rest of the etzim. So just because you cleared away this place doesn't mean that you covered all the areas where it could break. Avinamar bikulit. We're talking about the thigh bone. The thigh bone, which has a heavy load of marrow in it. It's a large bone with a lot of marrow in it. So there is a kazayit basar in the bone. So therefore, it doesn't matter that you cleared away the basar on the outside. The fact that you have basar on the inside already is problematic. So therefore, peeling it away is not going to do anything for you because of the marrow on the inside. Right? It's not atam. We have a Mishnah later on in the Masechta. Hapigul v'anotar. When it comes to these problematic issues within Kodoshim, mitam'im et ha-yadayim. They make the yadayim tme'im. Pigul, we know, is when you have a machshevet pigul, when the Kohen doing the avoda has an improper machshava with regards to eating outside of the zman, the korban, or about being makrivit on the mizbeach outside of the zman, in certain of the avodot, the main avodot, that's pigul. Notar is obviously pieces of the korban, flesh of the korban that was left over past its expiry time, and therefore it has to be burnt. Now both of these are mitamim et yadayim. Mitamim et yadayim, Ravuna v'Rav Chista, machloket amoraim, so why they're mitamim yadayim? Chanamar mipnei chashdei kuhuna, because of the kohanim that acted inappropriately. Chanamar mipnei atzlei kuhuna, because of the lazy kohanim. Mar matnei apigul, one of them is referencing or says this part of the Mishnah references apigul. Mar matnei anotar, and one says it references notar. Mar de matnei apigul, the one who says that this issue of metame yadayim is referencing pigul, mishum kashtei kuhuna. That's because of the problem with some of the kohanim. As Rashi notes over here, obviously it would never happen today, but these kashtei kuhuna shechashadim lefagel korban mishum eva. They have a little issue with the person who's bringing the korban. And so in order to take out their frustration or their animosity towards this individual, they make their korban pigul, and they ruin the korban for the ba'alim. So we worry about the kohanim doing or acting not as independent agents, not acting without any consideration as to who's bringing the korban, and therefore we have something punitive because they did something wrong, which is that they ruined someone's korban. So in order to prevent that, we were metame yadayim. I'll speak about that in 1 second. One who says that it was referencing the notar is Meshuma Atzle Kuna, because of the Kohanim were lazy, which is that they didn't finish all the basar that was there. And so we say to them, listen, you gotta finish up the Kodeshim. If you don't finish up the Kodeshim, it's because you weren't on top of the situation, and that laziness leads to you having Metame Yadayim. Now Metame Yadayim sounds like what's the big deal if you're Metame Yadayim. Metame Yadayim we know is an institution derabanan. It's not a din d'oraita. Mina Torah, if your body is tamei, then your hands are tamei, and the other way around. If your hands are tamei, so is your body. There's an institution of chachamim that you mitamei yadayim. Generally, we were mitamei yadayim when the chachamim want to prevent you from coming into contact with kodashim or truma. So that's why we had it in the beginning of the Gemara and Shabbat. We have it in other places where tumat yadayim was, for instance, by sfarim. They made it that it was mitamei yadayim so that you wouldn't put the sfarim together with the truma. But the idea is because the kohanim's source of sustenance was Truma and Kodashim. If you're Matami the Yadayim of the Kohanim, you're basically taking away his ability to get to Truma and his ability to get to Kodashim. So that type of punishment is significant for the Kohanim. It's not a simple thing. Now look, obviously you can go put your hands in a mikveh and be Mitaher, but it's not something that you just say, Matami Yadayim, what's the big deal? For the Kohanim, it was a very big deal because all their food involved things that you couldn't have Tamei Yadayim for. You couldn't have it for Truma, and you couldn't have it for Kodoshim. Now you ask me, if they're going to worry about their Tumat Yadayim, and they're going to make sure they go to the mikveh and take care of it, how come these people are being mefagel karbanot, and so on and so forth? That we've seen many times, which is that people within Ben Adam Li Makom, they are Chared al Dvar Hashem, whereas when it comes to Ben Adam Li Chaviro, they're a little lighter. They take the lighter route. So that's the same thing over here. He's willing to be mefagel somebody else's karban, but he's not willing to have his yadayim tmeim when he comes to consuming kodashim. But that's why this type of punishment is used, because it's significant to the kohanim. I mean, for Yisrael in general, and others, it's not as significant, but for a kohen, this is a very significant punishment, because now he loses access to all of his food sources. Alright, mar matni kezayit, or mar matni kebeitza. What is the size of basar that causes this problem? Is it a kezayit or a kebeitza? And this is, again, Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Manda matni kezayit, the one who says it's a kezayit for both of them, ki isura. Isur pigo, isur notar, is with the kezayit. So therefore, a kezayit, the chachamim isur be mitameh. Manda matni kebeitza, the one who says it's a kebeitza, ki tumato. Similar to tumat ochlim. Now, Rashi is a little unclear here about tumat ochlim. We've had this machloket a number of times. Everybody agrees to convey tuma from tumat ochlim, it has to be the size of kebeitza. That is muskam lakol, that you cannot convey tuma from tumat ochlim unless it's the size of a kebeitza. On the other hand, in terms of receipt of tuma, then there is a machloket with regards to ochlim. The Rov HaRishonim, the majority opinion is that koshul, any amount of ochel is mikabel tuma. There are opinions, including the Rabbeinu Tam, and Rashi, some places in Shas. Rashi Soter himself in Shas. Some places he subscribes to the position of Rabbeinu Tam, other places he subscribes to the position of the majority. I mean, it's obviously the other way around, that the Rabbeinu Tam is subscribing to Rashi, but the opinion is that even to accept Tuma, it has to be the size of a kebeitza. Over here, Rashi is unclear. He says, Kashir Tuma Tochlim, Doraita Bekebeitza. Kashir Ochlim in a Torah, which is a kebeitza. It's not clear if Rashi's mentioning the conveyance of Tuma or the acceptance of Tuma. But that ambiguity might lead you to believe that here he is subscribing to that position of the Rabbeinu Tam, that in order to accept Tuma, it's also a kebeitza. That's just a sidebar. The main issue here is that by Tuma Tochlim, kebeitza is significant, and that's where the Chachamim instituted this Tuma, is only by the size of a kebeitza. Now, Ibailu, why do we get into this at all? Because Yotze. We just discussed this issue of Yotze, of a korban that leaves its perimeters. For Kodeshei Kodashim, that's the Azara. Kodashim Kalim, that is Yerushalayim, the walls of Yerushalayim. So the Yotze, Gazru Rabbanan Tuma Olo. There did the Chachamim also institute Tuma. What's the question? Mi Arminan Notar de Gazru Tuma de Atili Tzulebe. The reason they were going to Tuma by Notar is because people get lazy when it comes to taking care of eating the Korban, and then further they end up with Notar. So this was a way to incentivize people not to have Notar. Vayotze Afuke Biyadayim. Talk about Yotze, this Korban Pesach just doesn't float past the wall. Somebody had to take it past that point in time. They did that. That was an active decision to move it. Lo mafkilei biyadayim, and therefore they're not going to take it out physically. So lo gazer ribanan tuma. We're not suspicious of the fact that people are going to continue to take their korban pesach outside of Yerushalayim. Happened by accident. Happened once. The people aren't going to. Oh, if you don't make it tamei, they're going to do it again. That type of behavior we're not so worried about. Oh, tuma lo shnar. Maybe it makes no difference. Any psul in the korban that is generated by you, maybe that has tuma with it. So Tashma, let's look at our situation here. Aver shiatza miksato. You have an aver that partially went out. Chotech ad shemegia le'etzem. You cut it down until you get the point of the bone. V'koleif ad shemegia le'perek. You peel it away the basar until you reach the joint. V'chotech, and then you cut it there. V'yamart gezeru bei rabbanan tumah. If you suggest here, the chomemer also gozer tumah by yotze, ki chotech lei mayhavi. When he slices it off, what did he gain? Hakametamele. It's already tamei. The basar that you're slicing off, or you're removing, is for one purpose, which is that basar is still ra'ui l'achila for the Karban HaPesach, because it didn't leave Yerushalayim. The portion that left Yerushalayim is already done. There's nothing to talk about. That's going to be burnt, and that you're going to get rid of. The portion that's still within Yerushalayim now can be eaten, and that's why you're slicing off the basar. If you were going to eat it anyway, you could burn the whole thing, and you wouldn't worry about it. The reason you're slicing off the basar is to eat the basar that's on the inside. The problem is now, the basar on the inside is in contact with the basar that was outside. And if the chachamim made the basar on the outside tamei, then the whole thing is tamei, and what's the point of slicing off the basar? Everything's tamei already. And then it's all problematic. So why would you slice it off in that instance? So it must be that it's not tamei. And that would be the answer to our question, that yotze is not tamei. Gemara says, tumat starim hi. Tumat starim is, it's a connection that is not visible. But tumat starim lo mitamyo. When it comes to tuma that is conveyed or passed through an area that is not visible, that doesn't work. That we learned out. It's not here, but we learned in Perak Yotzei Dofen and Nida that any chibur, any join area that causes a contact between something that's tamei and tahor, that is bebeta starim, that is not visible, the contact is not visible, that maga doesn't count. And that's because we learned out from the word v'yadav lo shataf mamayim. We learned out in the Gemara Nida. What the suggestion here is that the connection between the part of the basar that is tamei and the part of the basar that is not tamei is along a line that is not visible. You can't see the connection between them. The connections are buried in the basar that is connected there. So therefore, it's not a problem. I'll come back and just discuss that in a minute. The Ravina Damar, Rav Ravina says, Chiburei ochlim lav chiburhu, that when an ochel is not considered to be a single entity. When you're talking about food, it's not a singular entity. Ukaman de mifrite dami, and it is like it's separated, crumbled. They're independent parts. Then ma'ika the meimar, what are you going to say there? Hakanaga b'hadadi. That means that each part of the food touched each other, because we don't look at the whole food as a whole unit. We look at it as here, you have like a piece of meat here, there's a million pieces of meat that constitute this bigger piece of meat. Vakamatame, and then it should be tame. Ela, the man dematni kazayit, the lepe kazayit. Man dematni kabeitza, the lepe kabeitza. It's no problem. Just the case here is the part that is problematic is less than a kazayit or less than a kabeitza. So even though there's a problem of yotze, there's no problem of tuma. So it's an instance where there wasn't tuma relevant to the situation, and because it wasn't relevant to the situation, it wasn't discussed over here. I just note here what's something interesting, which is that the Gemara says here that, well, if an item has too much starim and it connects, that the tuma is not conveyed. What's interesting here in general is that when you have tuma, you touch something, an item, or a chayfetz, an ochel, we don't say that the point along which you touch is tamei, and then the tuma does not stretch or move along the item because of too much starim. Once you touch one part of the object, the entire object becomes tamei automatically. We don't look at this too much starim. Over here, all of a sudden, we're looking at too much starim because one part became tamei, the other part is tahor. So what you have to suggest over here, and it's probably clear from the case, is that the institution of tumah here is midrabanan, and the rabbanan's institution of tumah says that it's not going to pass through too much starim because of the way that they instituted tumah. The tumah is only on the part that was yotze, not on the part that remained inside. Now that type of split in tumah is not possible. You can't have that. In regular tumah, if the part of the object is tumah, the whole object is tumah. Over here, the chachamim made it so that when the part of it went out, that part's tameh, and the inner part is tahor. And that's what the Gemara is saying. It's tumat beta starim. That, oh, what's left behind, after you now have the object that's half tameh and half tahor, the contact between them is tumat starim. Because it's not functioning like regular tumah. It's functioning under this gzeira d'rabanan. And the gzeira d'rabanan creates this quirky situation where you have half tahor, half tameh, and therefore the conveyance of tumah is not going to take place because it's tumat beta starim. So it's not functioning under the normal rules of tumah, because the normal rules of tumah, you wouldn't have a question like this. One part of the basar became tameh, the entire basar would become tameh without any questions, excluding Ravina's position. But it would, oh, the whole thing would become tameh. It's one unit, one entity. There's no tumat beta starim. You touch one side. It's as if you touch the whole piece of meat. That's why it's unusual here, and that's why it has an unusual din. Tashma. Try to bring another proof. Amotzi basar pesach mechabura lechabura. Someone who moves a Korban Pesach from one group to another group. These are groups that are eating the Korban Pesach. He's moving it from one to the other. So we know that that's restricted. We'll get to that in a minute. Why? But that's restricted. Even though you violate a lotase, tahor, it's still tahor. My love, tahor, it's tahor, vasur, but it's still asur. Why? Because when you take basar, Korban Pesach, and you move it from one group to the other, it's the equivalent of taking out of its confines, taking out of its perimeter. And therefore, what would we see from here? That it's pasul. V'alafidu achik tani tahor. And nevertheless, it remains tahor. Alma, from this you would conclude, lo gazer rubanan tumah. That the chamim were not gozer tumah when it came to yotze. Now, wherever you have a situation like this, the Gemara, in a sense, gives you the answer before it starts, even though the Gemara is not going to go this direction. The Gemara says, I have a rule, which I know is true, that from one chabura to another chabura is restricted. You're not allowed to move from one group to another. Now, the pasuk only says, v'vayit echad ye'echel, that the Korban Pesach is eaten in one house. This is a case where you have two chaburot in a single house. One's eating in the dining room, one's eating in the kitchen, and now there's a restriction against moving the basar from one chabura to the other chabura. So the chachamim says, let's look at this. Why is it restricted? We'll see in a second. It's a derivative of v'vayit echad ye'echel. We'll say that that's the derivative, the isur comes from there. So v'vayit echad is the perimeters in which the Korban Pesach can be kept. You take it out of there, the Korban Pesach is problematic. So I'm going to say the same thing. Moving from Chabura to Chabura is also problematic. Now that I know that's called Yotze, so I'm going to say that that's like Yotze of taking it out of the city of Yerushalayim. And so since that's the case, I have a case here with Pasul, but yet Tahor. You have a lot of assumptions along the way. So to undermine that proof, you just have to take away one of those assumptions. That's what the Gemara will do in order to undermine that or to change it. It says, lo, tahor, umutar. The yotze mechabur lechura, lav ki yotze mechutza mechutza to dami. So there, Gemara just pulled away one of the assumptions, which is, no, it's tahor, and it's mutar to move it, because yotze, moving from chabura to chabura, is not the equivalent of taking it outside of its perimeter. Below mifsal, Gemara says, and you really think that this doesn't become pasul? The assumption being now is that when you move a karm pesach from chabura to chabura, that's not problematic, it's not pasul. Vakatani seifa. The seifa of that bright says, ha'ochlo, harizeh belotase. If you eat a karm pesach after it's moved from chabura to chabura, you violate a lotase. So it's clear that it's a sur to move it. Let's be sure. Moving it from one location to the other is problematic. So mishlamana, the mandamar kabetza, according to one who says that the size of tumah here is a kabetza, deep a kezayit, velet bake of betza. He can create this situation where there's a kezayit basar that's moving. Kezayit is significant within the world of isur. So in terms of moving the Karim Pesach, or moving it, or being in violation of a lotas, kezayit is sufficient. In order to get tumah, you need a kabetza. So he has a kezayit, he doesn't have a kabetza. So that's why you have isur, you have a lab here. On the other hand, you don't have tumah. But, according to the manda amar kezayit, ma'ikal ameymar. For him, the isur and the tumah are at the same threshold, which is a kezayit. You have less than a kezayit, you don't have isur, you also don't have tumah. You have more than a kezayit, you have both. So it doesn't work. Ella, v'yotzei pepesach lo kemi bailant lo gazru v'abanan tumah. So Gemara here comes to the conclusion, yes, ein ochanami. When it comes to yotzei, the chachamim are not gozer tumah, because by korban pesach, the confines are much smaller, and it involves a group of individuals are eating together, and therefore, my time of bnei chabura zrizim heim. When it comes to the bnei chabura, they'll remind each other, they'll take care of each other. When you have a lot of people involved in the mitzvah, engaged in this, they all come together in order to ensure that nobody takes it out of the chabura. So therefore, we trust them and don't worry about it. The chachamim didn't have to create some other disincentive to take it out of tumat yadayim, because bnei chabura zrizim heim. Even though it's interesting that bnei chabura zrizim heim shows up in different locations. Tosafot over here notes the Gemara in Kuf Gimel, which over there differentiates between Kohanim and the Bnei Chabura, and says Kohanim Zrizim Heim, Bnei Chabura ain't Zrizim Heim. So Tosafot says that the Gemara there says Bnei Chabura are not Zrizim. So over there he talks about the difference between things that are Shayachim, the Korban Pesach itself. By things that are Shayach, the Korban Pesach itself, we do say Bnei Chabura Zrizim. Whereas things that are objects that have to do with Kodashim in general, or to Mikdash in general, there we say Kohanim Zrizim Heim, we don't say Bnei Chabura Zrizim Heim. What's interesting is that the Gemara mentions Bnei Chabura Zuzim Heim also in the first parak in Shabbat with regards to the cooking of the Korban HaPesach. In general, you're not allowed to cook things going into Shabbat and put them directly on the fire going into Shabbat. That's what we call Garuf V'Katum. In order to prevent that problem, we have to sweep out the coals, make sure that you can't stoke the fire, so on and so forth. But the Korban HaPesach is one of those exceptions, which is a Mishal Shalim at the Pesach. You're allowed to lower the Pesach into the fire going into Shabbat and leave it there. Gemara asks, how could you do that? What's the problem? Shemi Yechatebe Kechalim. Gemara says, Bnei Chabura Zrizim Heim. When it comes to the Bnei Chabura, they are Zrizim Heim. So over there we see it also, here, there is regard to the Korban HaPesach, but it's a din in Shabbos. So it's interesting there that the Gemara applies it also over there, as opposed to what Tosfot says, it's directly dealing with the Korban HaPesach. It is dealing with Korban HaPesach, but it's a din in Shabbat. So it's interesting over there that the Gemara also has Bnei Chabura Zrizim Heim. Now the Gemara in the beginning of Eiruvin also has a issue with regards to when you have a public or a group of individuals together. What does that mean? When you have a group of individuals together, do we assume zizim heim, there's zariz, echad, tashanit, each one helps each other out? Or do we have diffusion of responsibility? Which there, the Gemara says that when you have a pot that's on the fire of a group of individuals, lo chamiv, lo karira, it's not hot, it's not cold, because everybody else thinks the other one's going to take care of it. There's also that balance in terms of dealing with large numbers of people or groups of people, whether there's a fusion of responsibility or is there each one reminding each other. Over here, we assume because of the nature of Korban HaPesach and the involvement of the individuals, people were makpid, it was a very big event. It involved a lot of being careful about certain things, that people were really on top of these situations, and therefore they were reminding each other to make sure that they were doing the right thing. So what's the question we have? What's a regular kodashim? What's the din by yotze? Do they already have tumah? The Gemara says, as a teku, we don't have a conclusion about that. Because by other kodashim, you don't have the bnei chabura zrizim heim that you have by korban pesach, and therefore, is there gzeirav tumah? And that we don't have any evidence to, so we don't know what the din is there. Okay, now the Gemara wants to know, we made an assumption over here that motzim mechabura lechubaru as a violation. Why is that? The chabura minayin. Where's that from? Where do you know that from? The Tanya, we have a brayta. Lo tutsi min abayit min abasar chutza. You're not allowed to take it out of the house. In the allowed to bayit lebayit. That sounds you can't take it from house to house. Mi chabura le chabura minayin. From one chabura within a house, from one chabura to the other. How do I know that? Tamlomar chutza. Chutz lachilato. That chutza is an extraneous chutza, and chutz means outside. Outside of what? I'd say if you're leaving the house, then you're going outside. So that chutza that says outside means outside of the chabura that you're in. And from that, they learn lo totsi applies not only to the house, but also from the chabura, and that's the lota said that we're speaking about over here. Amar Rabbi Ami, amutzi basar pesach mi chabura le chabura, enu chayav ad shiyaniach. The person who takes basar from one chabura to the other is not chayav until he puts it down. Hotzak div bay. So over there we're talking about lo totsi, like hotzah, kishabat. That's the same thing as Shabbat. Ma Shabbat ad avad akira vanacha. By Shabbat, you're only chayav for hotza'ah, for moving an object, if you're okir it. You're the one who takes it off its resting position, vanacha, and you place it down. Afachanami. Also over here, ad avad akira vanacha. Also over here, you have to do akira vanacha. It's an amazing statement over here, because the two don't seem to be correlated whatsoever. Shabbat is an issue of melacha. It's about, as we've discussed in the past, doing things that are creative, doing things that involve, whether in the case of hotza'ah, might involve social interactions, they bring you up gifts one to the other. But those items are specific to the mitzvah of Shabbat, of hotza'ah of Shabbat. All of a sudden over here, to enter this into the world of kodeshim seems strange. Now, the other thing you have to ask is, where is the Isur of hotza'ah that the Gemara is relying on here to say, oh, we have hotza'ah by Shabbat, where is that written? The Tosfot notes over here that it's al yitzei ish mimkomo b'yom haShabbat. When I say al yitzei ish mimkomo b'yom haShabbat, there the Gemara learns out of that tchumim. But we know tchumim are only midrabanan. So the pashtut apasuk is really about leaving your location. But the chachamim's interpretation of the pasuk midoraita is al yitzei ish mimkomo on Shabbat is when you're carrying something. You know how to carry things from your location. That's the isur on Shabbat of al yitzei hotza'ah. Now in terms of hotza'ah, we also have another source. By the Mishkan, it says over there that Moshe calls out in the Am, Yikalei ha'am mehavi. The Moshe says, no more bringing, and the people stop bringing the stuff to the Mishkan, the donations to the Mishkan. There the Gemara also learns out Hotza'ah from that. So Tosfot over here asks the question, why do I need two sources for Hotza'ah in the Torah? He says, oh, one's for Hotza'at Ani, one's for Hotza'at Ashir, based on the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Shabbat. But still, why do you need so many sukim? So this is Tosafot, the Shitato, with regards to Hotza'ah. He says, Hotza'ah is a malacha geru'ah. It's not a real malacha, it's kind of quasi-malacha. And therefore, anything you want to say about hotza'ah has to have evidence in the psukim to that fact. Anything you want to say, whatever is asur, is only asur because we know we have evidence of it in the psukim or in the Mishkan that existed. It was exactly like that in the Mishkan. Not just like that in the Mishkan, it has to be exactly like that in the Mishkan. So hotza'ah has this extra threshold or standard by which only if it's mentioned in the psukim or if it's directly in the Mishkan. Which brings up what makes the question even stronger, which is to why we are extrapolating that to Kodeshim or to Pesach. The only thing I can suggest is that, in general, with these types of items where we have a restriction, and then we're looking for a definition of that restriction, we have to find some sort of paradigm. Chachamim are always looking for some sort of paradigm that we've seen before, so they went to Shabbat, where there is such a paradigm. So that's why they did it, not because there's a real correlation or connection between Hotza'ah and Shabbat, and Hotza'ah mechabura lechabura when it comes to Korban HaPesach. Although, again, we could explain it, and this I mentioned in our introduction to the Mishnayot in Shabbat, an introduction when we began Masechet Shabbat, that most of the malachot, the other 38 malachot, involve creative malacha, which the individual does. Hotza'ah is the one exception to that rule. So then what is the problem with Hotza'ah? The Hotza'ah is the difference between what happens on Yom Tov and what happens on Shabbat. On Yom Tov, Hotza'ah is permitted. Why is Hotza'ah permitted on Shabbat? The reason being because people brought gifts and food to each other. The idea of being mesameach, helping each other out, that was an integral part of Yom Tov, was the sharing of the meals and sharing of the food together, mesameach li'aniim, all those types of items that take place on Yom Tov. So we know when it's restricted on Shabbat, that's what it's coming to restrict, which is what that which is mutar on Yom Tov, based on the pasuk of Nehemiah, the Shlach Manot, and Nachono, right? The idea that gifts and things are exchanged on Yom Tov. We'll see that when we get to the Gemara on Beitzah. So based on that, the restriction on Shabbat is to limit the amount of social interaction in that way. That's part of man's ability to be a creative individual, to create societies, to interact and friendships and so on and so forth. That's a human element of creativity. And so therefore, we restrict it on Shabbat. The problem over here of moving mechabura to chabura is the exact same problem. You have a circle of individuals in one chabura and another chabura. What a person is trying to do is move from one group to the other group. So in the sense of moving from one social circle to another social circle, it emulates in some sense that idea that we're trying to restrict on Shabbat as well. That's the only thing I could think in terms of connection between the two items. Otherwise, I would just say that if they're looking for a paradigm and they found the paradigm in Shabbat. They were dragging it on the rods. Now, this is talking about the Parim and Nisrafim or the Sirim and Nisrafim. Parim and Nisrafim, Sirim and Nisrafim, as well as Parv Seir Shel Yom HaKippurim, have to be burnt Michutz LaMachaneh. They have to be taken out because they are Chataot, whose dam goes bifnim. We know this from this week's tapim, that if you have dam chatat that goes pnima, even if it's the right thing, that's what it's supposed to happen, then you know that the basar, the animal, goes out to sreifa. So the animal going out to sreifa has to be taken out. So here they're dragging it out. They're carrying it. It's heavy. They're carrying it out of the machaneh. We have a limud by Yom HaKippurim. It says by Yom Kippur that only mechutz la machaneh. As soon as you leave machaneh, you're tameh. We have by Parim and Sirim Sirim Sirim, that's to be outside of shlosh machanot. The Gemara reconciles them as saying that you have to burn it outside of three machanot, but as soon as you leave the first machaneh, you're tameh. First machaneh being the azara. So as soon as you exit the azara, the kohanim who are taking this, or people, or individuals who are engaged in this, become tameh, and the begadim become tameh. Harishonim yatsu chutzu chumat azara. The first group, they have four people carrying it on top of rods or some sort of mechanism for carrying it. So they go out of the azara. Machronim lo yatsu. The people behind them haven't left yet. Harishonim mitamim begadim. The first ones become tameh begadim. Machronim mitamim begadim. And the latter ones do not become tameh. Valonach is your question, Josh. Wait a minute, this is not like Shabbat. By Shabbat, had you done this, there would be no kiyuv here because the parim or sirim have not left the azara entirely. That means it hasn't come to a rest outside the azara. He asked the question and he answered it. Binigrarim, they're dragging it along the ground. I'd say it's an interesting answer only because they're carrying it on motot. They're carrying it on the poles in order to move it along. So what do you mean they're dragging on the ground? So I guess they're dragging the poles with the animal on the ground. They drag the animal out of the azara, and therefore the nach happens automatically because it never left the ground. The akira was only by dragging it, and so too the anacha is by, when it's dragging it, it reaches that point where it's anacha because it's within three tefachim of the ground. So what's interesting about here is that what Josh asked before, this does not match what we have in Shabbat. In Shabbat we know that if you throw an object out into Rishut Rabim and you're still holding one end of it, that is not a chiyuv because you don't have hanacha. The fact that you can recoil or you can pull the item back makes it that it's not called a hanacha. So it's over here. The first guys got out. The last guys are still inside. They could pull the object back in. So that should not be classified as an hanacha. So Tosafot has to deal with this, exactly this problem. This doesn't parallel Shabbat. So he says, you know what? The case is here where the first one's left. The entire animal's outside the azara. And the people on the inside are the only people left on the inside. So that's number one. That's how he deals with that the entire animal has now left the azara. It's just the individuals that are left on the inside. Now, also, he says, because of that, the whole weight of the animal is outside. Now, the people inside, they could still pull it back in, so you still have the same problem. It solves the problem, but because the animal's weight is so much or so great that if they pulled on the motot that they're still holding, it would not bring the animal back in, because now so much of the weight is outside that they don't have enough control to pull it back in. Right, so that's how he solves the problem, but he's asking exactly your problem, which is, this doesn't exactly parallel Shabbat, so he has come up with the Hechi Timtzeh to make the case fit into Hotza'ah on Shabbat. Just as a trivia question, the word motot appears in the Torah with regards to, by the Meraglim, and one other place it appears in the Torah, by the Meraglim, and one other place which most people do not know, which is, if you ask anybody, how was the Aron carried in the Mishkan? Badim. How was the Mizbeach carried? Badim. It also had Badim on it. How was the menorah carried? It does say, at the end of Parshad, Bamidbar, right? The last Aliyah in Bamidbar, it says, Vasak al amot. They put it on a mot. On one of the motot. That's just a little trivia question. That how they carried the menorah was on motot. That was exactly, this word mot is used there by the menorah. That's how they carried the menorah, because the menorah doesn't have Badim. Alright, next Mishnah. Ever shiatza mitzato. It's an eiver that went out partially, then you cut down to the etzim. And then you koleif achimagile perak, you go along the bone, take the basar off until you reach the joint, for chotech and the ikarach. This is what we've been quoting all along. Uvamugdashim. If it's not a carbon pesach, what do you do? Koteitz bekupitz. You take the hatchet, and you smash it in half. Shem bo mishum shvirat etzim, because you don't have this problem of shvirat etzim. Very easy to deal with in mekudashim versus in carbon pesach, that's why we have the difference in the din. Now, this is a separate din. Separate din is, what's considered to be yotze? When you have something that's considered the perimeter, the outer perimeter of where kodeshim are allowed, for instance, kodeshim kodeshim, the azara, kodeshim kalim, Yerushalayim, the chuma. Where does the chuma end? Where does Yerushalayim end? Where does the azara end? Does it end on the outside of the walls or on the inside of the walls? So this is what the Mishnah says. Mina egef ulifnim. If it's from the slam or jam, the doorway, if you look at any door, the door goes into the door frame. Inside the door frame, there's another frame which the door hits or slams against. That's called the door jam, the door slam. That is what we're speaking about there. So mina egef ulifnim, from that location, inward, kilifnim, as the din of lifnim. Mina egef ulichutz, from that location, outwards, kilichutz. That is considered outside. Obviously, what's missing from the Mishnah, which the Gemara will ask, is, what about this? What's the din with regards to the gap itself? Acholonot, windows, vovea chuma, the windows and the thickness of the wall, kilifnim, as the din of lifnim. The windows and the wall, or the thickness of the wall, is kilifnim, as the din of lifnim. So that's different than the she'arim. When you're talking about the doorways, you're talking about the gateways through. You can imagine that today, the walls of Yerushalayim, you have a similar idea than the walls of Yerushalayim. When you go cross through, the walls have a thickness to them. I mean, these aren't the original walls. These are much later walls, but they have thickness to them. Plus, the gateway itself has a breach in the whole wall, but the gateway itself has that thickness of the wall to walk through is the whole gateway to get through. So that gateway has a different din than the walls. What we're clearly saying is that the walls, the entire thickness of the walls, or windows, are considered to be lifnim. The question is with the gateways. The gateways has this din of the agaf or the egef that is determining the thickness of the wall, because agaf is also a wing. So now, Amrav Yehuda, Amrav. Amrav Yehuda says, v'chein l'tfila. Same din for davening. Oh, so that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, to be mitzdar for a minyan. Mitzdar for a minyan, mitzdar for l'asara. When are you determined to be inside or outside? Same determination. The agaf determines that. The door is M. If you're outside of that, you're outside of the minion room. If you're inside, you're part of the minion. That's what Rashi says. Upliga, the Rabbi Shua ben Levi, and that argues on Rabbi Shua ben Levi. The Rabbi Shua ben Levi, afilu mechitza shel barzel, inam afseke b'Yisrael l'bim shebashamayim. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says you can't put something between Jews and God. There's no mechitza between them. This is actually utilized in the Gemara and Sotah with regards to Birkat Kohanim. So if you're placed in the shul next to a pillar, and you have to be standing right behind a pillar, do you not get Birkat Kohanim? The answer is, there's no problems. The Mechitzat Barzel is not mafsik between Yisrael and Avim Shebashamayim. You're okay. The bracha gets around the pole, so you don't have to worry about it. So now, you have a machloket here. Tosafot raises the issue here. We saw this back on Erevin Daf Tzadi Bet as well. Tosafot raises the issue, which is that it's clear in the other Gemaras that we pass them like Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. That Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi is the halacha, which is that there's no Mechitzat Barzel that's mafsik. On the other hand, we also pass them like Yudom Arav, which is that the din is like that for tefillah. Now, the fact that we brought them together already creates a problem, because now you have two people who the halacha is like, and now we have them supposedly arguing. So that's why Tosafot says, I can't agree with Rashi over here. I can't suggest that the issue here is about a minyan, mitzdarif l'asara. That it can't be about mitzdarif l'asara, because we have a din of Rabbi Yehuda Marab, and we have a din of Rabbi Shub and Levi, and we can't pass them like both and end up with a different din over here. So therefore, Tosafot over here bifurcates the din and says this. Tama de Gemara de Mechitza Mafsechet de Tziruf. That the Stam Gemara in Erevin suggests that if you have a mechitza, if you have a wall here, then you can't connect. The Gemara in Erevin was talking about when you have a big room next to a small room. That breach, the wall between them broke into each other. And you have the shats standing in one, you have the minion standing in the other, or the other way around, which is mitzdarif to which. So there the Gemara says that the big room drags the small room with it, but it's not the other way around. So there, when you're talking about a mechitza that sits between them, there is an issue with for being mitzdarif to a minion. When you want to be mitzdarif for a minion, you need to be in the same room. On the other hand, to benefit from a minyan, or to benefit from a tzibur, that you do not need to be necessarily inside of the room. Because, he brings examples of that, if you're walking by a shul, and you hear the shofar, or you hear the megillah, you're yotze. So you're a beneficiary. Now, the answer to that could be that those don't require asara. They don't require a minyan, so it's not an issue. But, v'nir l'rid, och amayr l'inyan l'anot yachid k'dusha, v'hesh mei rabo mevorach. So over here, this is not the issue, and this is what I was saying here, this bifurcation. This is a question, can you answer Amen Yehesh Mei Rabba? It's a Davar Shebekdusha that requires a minion. Can you answer Kedusha if you're not in the room with the minion? You're in the back, in the Beit Midrash, where there's a wall. You're in another room that's adjacent to the Beit Knesset. Can you then answer Kedusha, and can you then answer Mehesh Mei Rabba, which requires a minion? So the way Tosfah learns it is, That's the din of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, Ein mechitza mafseket. There's no mechitza that's mafsek between Yisrael and Avim Shereish Hamayim. On the other hand, to join the minyan, to be mitzarif to the minyan, their being inside or outside the room will have impact. It will have significant impact on whether you're part of the minyan or not part of the minyan. We discussed this in the Tosfot then. We discussed the fact that between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan seems to be a difference in terms of the things like the Ezrat HaNashim. Ezrat HaNashim, like in this shul and many shuls in Europe, was a separate area. It's a balcony. It's an area that's totally separated from the shul, whether you can really be mitzarif to the minyan over there. So that's a question that's brought up. The Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan have a different opinion about that. But the main thing to remember is that to be a part of the minyan, you need to be in the minyan. And number two is, even for answering the minyan, the optimal situation is to be together with the minyan. And so it's always important to be in the Beit Midrash, to be together, not in the women's section somewhere, behind a mechitza somewhere, or behind a door in a Beit Midrash somewhere, to daven with the shul in the place that they are davening. That way you avoid any problems. Obviously, when it has to do with bringing 10 people together, it's ma'akev. That's the machlokim between the achronim. But yeah, if you're in there, most of the achronim believe that that would be a problem. There are some who say that if you can see each other, it's enough. That if from the Ezra Nashim you're able to see the people and they can see you, that that's enough to be mitzvah to the minyan. The Ezra Nashim is only problematic if you can't see each other. But if you can see each other already, that's enough to be mitzvah. The Aruch HaShulchan is against that. And he says that you can't even be mitzvah in that case. It has nothing to do with seeing each other. You're in a separate area, a separate entity. Can't be mitzvah. Alright, Aguf Agasha. Now we go back to what we discussed in the Mishnah, the problem of Agaf Lifnim, Agaf Luchutz. Might mean Agaf Lifnim, Kilifnim. Ha Agaf Atzmo, Kilichutz. That means that the Agaf itself is like the answer. Ema Seifa, mean Agaf Luchutz, Kilichutz. Ha Agaf Atzmo, Kilifnim. The Agaf itself is like the inside. So look, Asha. Kan Bishari Azara, Kan Bishari Yushlaim. Makes a difference which gateways we're talking about. Da Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mnei Ma Lonit Kachu Shari Yushlaim. Why was the depth of the Shearim of Yerushalayim not Nitkadesh? Tzoraim were thrown out of the city, out of the walled cities in Eretz Yisrael. They have to leave the city. So they live outside the city. Now, when they're outside the city, how do they get shelter? They have no shelter outside the city. So where do they stay? They used to stay in the gates of the city. So the fact is that they provided them shelter in the gates of the city by not being Mikadesh, the gates of the city. So therefore they could sit underneath the shelter of the gateways and not be in a problem of Kedusha. So that's where, I mean, Agaf Ulifnim is problematic, but the Agaf itself is Kilachutz. That makes basically most of the frame of that area of the Sharim are considered to be outside. As opposed to the Azara, Nikanor is the gateway to the Azara. It's the eastern side gate that enters into the Azara. It has a special name, we'll get to that, the Mishnayot and Yoma. Mishnayot and Yoma discuss a story, a miraculous story about those gates and how they ended up there. Those doorways were made out of bronze, Nechoshet, as opposed to the remainder of the doors that they upgraded in the Mikdash to gold. But those doors themselves were made out of bronze and it did not upgrade them because of the miracle that took place with them. They were known for the individual who brought them from Mitzrayim. They were actually brought from Mitzrayim and his name was Nikanor. So they were known as Shar Nikanor. Shar Nikanor was the main entrance, the eastern entrance to the Azara. So there it says there they were also not mitkadesh the depth of that entranceway, which implied that all the other entranceways to the Azara, the entire entranceway was Kodesh. But this one was the exception. Mipnei, shmitzorim omdim sham machnisim behonot yadam. Because the mitzorim stand there and they put their fingers in. Mitzorim on their eighth day, after they have their 7 days of Tara, and then they come into the Mikdash to bring their Korban on the eighth day because they're mechusei kapara, part of the process is that they have to have the dam, asham, placed on their thumbs, on their big toes, on their tnuchos nam, as well as the shemen. And so how can they do that? The korban is inside the Azara. They're outside the Azara. They're not allowed to go into the Azara because there's a chiyuv karet associated with them entering into the Azara. So what we allow them to do is put their thumbs in. But they can only put their thumbs in if they can actually get close enough to the Azara. So what do we do? The Shar Nikanor was not Kodesh, so they could be all the way into there and just stick their thumbs in. Ah, how could they stick the thumbs in? Either bia miksat lo shmei bia, just putting a portion of your body into the Azara is not problematic, or it's a gzerat hakatuv. The gzerat hakatuv is that you're allowed to put your thumb in. It says that's what you have to do, so that's what you do. But otherwise you would not be allowed in. What's interesting here is, as Tosafot points out, is why don't we just differentiate and say that the mission is talking about all the sharim in the Mikdash, chutz mishar nikanor, and you can make that same distinction as we have in our Mishnah. Instead of saying Shari Yushalayim versus Shari Azara, you could have made that a finer distinction between the Shari Azara. All Shari Azara, Chutz Mishar Nikanor. He says probably because the context of the Mishnah is Korban Pesach. For Korban Pesach, what are the parameters or perimeter of Korban Pesach? Chomot Yerushalayim. So therefore, it makes sense that the Mishnah is speaking about something that's in Chomot Yerushalayim, not Chomot Azara. Now, Chomot Azara is relevant because of the Chalavim and because of the Dam. But in terms of the broader Korban HaPesach, it's eaten inside of Yerushalayim. So the perimeter we're speaking about is probably the walls of Yerushalayim. So therefore, they wanted to come up with a distinction that involved Sharei Yerushalayim and not just the Sharei HaAzara. All right, yeah, we'll stop here. And want to wish everybody a Gemar Chatima Tova and ask Mechila for any inconveniences, difficulties, or issues, or slights that anybody might have taken offense to what I said.